Welcome to the Property Couch, where each week you get to listen to two of Australia's leading property experts. Bryce Holdaway, co-host of Location, Location, Location Australia on Foxtel's Lifestyle Channel, and Ben Kingsley, Chair of Property Investment Professionals of Australia and the 2014 and 2015 Property Investment Advisor of the Year.
All right, folks, you're on the Property Couch, where each week Ben and I bring you the insider's guide to property investing. Welcome to the couch, mate.
Thank you, Bryce. Thank you. But I'm a bit somber.
Yeah.
Mm. Pies. We've got to win 7 of our last 8.
No chance.
Yeah. But, you know, come on, boys. Just dig deep. Find a way. Believe. Get the chat up out there. Just, you know, get engaged.
Mate, you think you're too big. You just got to win. Our game.
Dude. We our won game. A few in a row a while back.
Just
come our on, game. Pies. Let's talk VFL team. They're going all right. Knocked off Footscray last week.
Did you?
Yeah. Premiers of last year, we were going okay in the twos.
Doesn't matter, mate. If you're in the bottom eight of the ladder, you can still
I'm going to Vic Park and watching it. No, we're side by side, Bryce. Side by side. Nathan, he deserves another term.
You can't be serious.
I can't be serious.
Let's get on to serious matters today.
Hey, had Freya go.
That's what I said. Let's get on to serious matters today. Realestate.com.au, Ben.
Yes.
Video came out this week. The power of compounding.
Mm.
And I believe there was a sneaky sort of beer shot in there. Was there a beer shot in there, Ibis?
Mm, was it?
Yeah. Had a terrific first season. It's the last video of season one. So now I'm doubting myself. You two.
Yeah, no, I've watched it.
I think it was in the pub.
Yeah, it was in the pub.
It was in the pub. Yep. Yeah, the big red couch in the pub.
Yep.
So a little sneaky, how sneaky can we get here, Ben? But season two, we've shot it.
Yes.
It's currently in the edit suite.
It is.
About to be launched. And let's just say when you view it, just say we understand the pain that a swimsuit model goes through when she's asked to pretend it's summer when it's actually winter.
And we relied on a Melbourne outdoor setting.
And a Melbourne outdoor setting. It was fart-reezing.
Yes, it was cold.
And you weren't wearing...
But like true professionals...
We ship it all the way through.
We soldiered on.
So, but there's a little thing to see if you notice Ben and I shivering through season two. But gosh, we loved it. There were some powerful nuggets that we're unpacking, Ben. Yep. So if you're not on our social media, now's the time at the Property Couch, at Ben Kingsley AU, at Bryce Holdaway, because we put the little snippets out via our social media.
We do.
Which means that you can then log on and see the full episode.
Yep. Under the guides or news area of realestate.com.
Yep, so it's a terrific collaboration that we're really excited about doing. So
very good.
All right, today, Ben.
123, episode 123, what do we got?
Our theme today is what actually is owner-occupier appeal,
Ben? Yeah, we're gonna unpack it.
No, we're not. We're gonna give some gold.
Yeah.
We're gonna give some nuggets of gold, and we're gonna unpack it. So we talked about what scarcity is.
Yep.
We talked about in certain parts what makes for investment grade.
Yeah.
But what actually is owner occupier appeal? And it's important because when you're buying an investment property, you're still buying a property that has owner occupier appeal, even though it sounds paradoxical that you're an investor.
It does. So I've written an article probably a few years back where I talked about it, you know, that owner occupied appeal property. So is the like.
Say that again, come on.
Owner occupied appeal property.
Damn, you got it right.
Is a bit like mainstream music, top 40 music.
Ooh.
And here's why. Because. You know how we have sort of the top 40 charts? The top 40 charts is what most people are saying that they do want to get into in terms of that they're listening. They like it. They absolutely like it. So it's a bit like, you know, but sometimes if you tune into a certain radio station and there's a lot of alternative music, some you're going to like, some you're going to not like. So for me, owner-occupier appeal, it's a bit like top 40 music in the sense that I want to try and get the mainstream appeal. So that's what we thought to do. We'd just riff it in terms of talking about how we go from top down into, and we're going to even walk through the property today, Bryce.
We are going to walk through the property today, but just to show that this episode is unrehearsed, it's live.
Yes.
There's no editing.
Yes.
We're going to pretend that this is the beginning and the top of the show where I go through the Mindset Minute.
Of course, the Mindset Minute. Let's go back to the Mindset Minute.
I figured our community is full of Mindset Minutes. They don't need it. But today, mine's very simple. Very, very simple. Do you know what happened then, Ben?
Bryce, you had to come around, did you?
No, you and I were chatting around. Ibis walked around you. She comes over here. And then she's got a Surface Pro.
Yeah.
So she's trying to put her fingers down my screen because I've got a Mac. And then she realizes, and she points to that and she goes, so just so you know, folks,
we are nothing but professional
and
polished.
And where would we be without Iris? Tell her.
Yeah, tell her. Okay. Mindset minute, bro. Tell me about your mindset minute.
Very simple one, Ben. Very simple one. You know I love a good Jim Rohn and a good Zig Ziglar.
Yes.
In fact, they're probably two of the icons for mindset minute for me. So never wish life were easier, Ben. Wish that you were better.
Ooh, I really like that one.
And don't wish for, this is an extension of that. I can't remember who said this, but I picked it up the other day. Don't wish for a lighter load, wish for a stronger back.
Bit of resilience.
Ponder those. So I think that's terrific because...
tenacity.
We're speaking right to the heart of the people who listen to our podcast, Ben. Because some of them are in the zone right now of buying an investment property, and we're really topical. And some of them just have a portfolio and they just want to stay sharp.
Yep.
But ultimately, I think what's consistent with all of our listeners is they may know some of this stuff. We do talk some of the principles that layer upon layer upon layer, and they get repeated. But they're just looking for that one little extra snippet that goes, right, that's just ratcheted up, and I just got a little bit sharper.
Yep.
So never wish life were easier. Wish that you were better. And I think that's synonymous of our listener base.
Man. Yeah, they want to get better. So hopefully we can... Iron sharpens iron, doesn't it, Bryce?
Oh, look at you.
Hey. See, if you say it to me enough times, it sinks into this thick brain of mine.
Mate, mindset minute's open to you. What's one of your favourite mindset minutes?
Oh, success leaves clues. I
like that one.
Yeah, I think that one's a really good one in terms of... And, you know, I'm just a believer in there's no such thing as a free lunch. You've got to do the work. You've got to, the 10,000 hours principle. If you want to be a subject matter expert...
Do you know that Tim Ferriss doesn't believe in the 10,000 hour principle? Malcolm Gladwell wrote the book, 10,000 Hours, and I think the majority of people would agree. But because of his minimum effective dose...
Yeah, I get it.
He wants to...
fast track it.
He wants 10,000 to go down to the top 300 hours that you need to know.
Yep.
Hence, that's why I'm going so well with my guitar stuff, because I'm following his lead. Actually, in theory, it's really good. So there we go.
Love it.
Owner-occupier appeal, Ben.
So let's start with that. So let's start big. Let's start talking about, you know, when we're talking about cities, we're making assumptions on cities. So we're talking about, you know, Melbourne, most livable city in the world. You know, you want to have all of those, you know, all of the bells and whistles, employment. In my view, obviously, you've got to be a knowledge city because that's where most of the future is going to lead. So that's going to give you some comfort around the knowledge city. So I wanted to start with city in terms of infrastructure, all the big things in there. The big cities do have most of that. So that's the tick that we start with at the top. Where do we go to from there, mate?
For me, once I get to the suburb, it's, you know, the three frameworks, all the three pillars we always talk about: economic activity, human interest, human behaviour.
Yep.
So if I overlay them, owner-occupier appeal for the suburb is where I am largely going to minimise the commute that I have to get to my employment centre. That's going to be a huge one for me.
Yep.
And then the human interest is, you know, what do I do with my weekends? Have I got a nice park to walk my kids to? Is there a public tennis court? Is there some nice cafes? Can I get to the train station easily? Do I feel safe as I'm walking down the streets? Are there other likes? Are there people like me around me? Is that sense of community? And then, of course... To a certain extent, let's be honest, you know, the human behaviour that comes from what do people think of me living in the suburb, whether you believe or not, that's the truth, that people are often judge where they live based on people driving up their driveway and going, wow, you live here.
There's status in that. I mean, and status and brand of a suburb can be affected by crime rates.
Mm.
It can be affected by those types of things. You know, I don't feel safe in this area. It doesn't feel familiar to me, whether it be the different ethnicities, whatever it may be. It's different things for different people. And we are generalizing in that comment. But effectively, status is born over time and brand is born over time. So, you know, if we mention areas like Mossman, Double Bay, Neutral Bay, if we mention areas like Toorak, you know, Brighton, South Yarra.
Bulimba, Hamilton, South Perth.
Correct, all of those things, they've built their brand up and now that's very hard for that brand to be damaged. In terms of areas that are gentrifying, that's taking place. And then there's the other areas which are going to take, you know, an incredible amount of time for those areas to get that type of confidence that they are in safe environments. And that's all product of the demographic inside that area. So, yeah, so we, we've done it down to the suburb. Now, how do you check that out? I mean, you know, we want to give you practical ways in which to do that. Jump onto Google Earth. Jump onto Google Earth and basically tick on the rail lines, tick on the roads, tick on the amenity, and all of these things will just start popping up. And you'll basically see all of these things from medical centres to schools to all of these wonderful things. That is the great way. And you just fly over them. If you want to sort of get a sense, if you're not familiar with them, because obviously from a borderless investor point of view, if you're going to be looking interstate, then it's important to be able to look at that. So the way in which I look at it, that's effectively what I'm talking about in terms of coming into that. So we get that, we get the owner-occupier appeal, we get the human interest, human behaviour, the economic story of that area, and all of a sudden, we're now into the suburb. Take me into the suburb, Ross. What are we then doing?
Well, then the obvious thing is I've got to go down a street.
Yep.
And I've got to find out where in the suburb I want to be. So A streets, B streets, C streets. But for me, I want to know the invisible line, Ben. Mm. I want to know where's the invisible line in the suburb where I cross over and it's a little bit higher, where I don't cross over, it's a little bit lower. And I think that's only something that you can get from having a familiarity with the suburb, mm-hmm. talking to the locals, being experienced. But clearly, you know, the premium prices are paid in the A streets, usually parked up on the you know.
Yes.
I remember when we were driving through Flemington, remember that recently you go, oh, and you remember you showed me the back street from your place to get to the office. And, and as we go down the hill, you go, right, now we're going towards the workers' cottages as we go down the hill. And as we're at the top of the hill, those grand mansions that were there. So it's important to understand where those A streets are, the B streets are, and the C streets are. And obviously gravitate towards the A and the B. But for me, it's those invisible lines. What does that mean? Where are the cut-throughs where people are trying to get through to school? Where is it? Where are the people who are... there's a suburb in Melbourne which is actually quite good, within 10 kilometres, but it's got a very large housing commission estate in it. And we want to know where they walk, which streets they walk through to get to the train station, because that actually does have an impact. So those invisible lines I'm looking for.
Yeah, so the other thing you can also do in terms of those visible lines is you can ask some of the real estate agents in that area. How many suburbs have you talked, when you speak to as many real estate agents as we do, the Golden Triangle. Mm. I mean, there is so many suburbs that people talk about a Golden Triangle. And what they're basically saying is the ABC, you know, in terms of the areas inside that suburb that are great streets. And that's what they potentially call it. So they give some marketing ploy to it, or is it, you know, that's the high-rise strip, or that's the blah, blah, blah. So what you're trying to do is you know, you can get a quick assessment of that by talking to a local estate agent to talk about, hey, do you have any Golden Triangle? I mean, where's your best streets in this area? Is there a congregation of them? Now, what's fascinating then, though, Bryce, is when you actually go into those streets, there's something you see. You know, I talked before about mainstream appeal, but you know, when I'm turning in to a great street, what do I see? What are the first things that jump out at me in my mind?
Right, the canopy of the trees, yes. the width of the road.
Yeah.
Are there Audis parked in there, or are there, you know, the Datsun 180B?
Yeah.
That sort of stuff.
Yeah, yeah. And as you you just get a sense of what a beautiful street, and you can see how, you know, how wonderful it would live there in the hot summer days. You'd have a bit of tree foliage and all those types of things. They really do speak volumes about manicured gardens, well kept, not too busy, accessible parking if you don't have off-street parking, a bit of that sort of on-street parking if you need it. So that tells the story, you know, nature strips that are maintained and potentially front gardens. Now we're sort of starting to turn our view and have a look at the stock on the street. So have a look at each of those properties. And coming back to that sort of the top 40 analogy that I used before, if I put 100 people on a bus and we're driving down a street, and I say to everyone, all right, I want you to both look out both sides of the windows, all right, and I want you to jump out at me when you see an ugly property.
Mm.
You know, and we're driving along, and then all of a sudden, yep, you know, everyone's yep. And it's like, okay, so you turn at it, and it just looks out of place in the street.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's that alternative song that some people are going to like, but the majority aren't. Now, how do we correlate that to demand when we're buying that property? Well, if that property comes up for sale, because it might be so unique, there's a lot of people who just go, no, it's ugly. Mm-hmm. I don't like it.
Mm-hmm.
So all of a sudden, the resale pressure on that, whereas the street itself could be phenomenal, that particular property may underperform the street because it doesn't have that first impression owner-occupier appeal. So that's the way in which I like to explain it when I'm sitting down and talking to clients. That is, you know, once you get that. So I always say, have you got an owner-occupier appeal eye? Have you got a good eye for property? Because the people who have alternative views of that boxes look attractive and that those boxes won't date, ultimately aren't necessarily going to be a good person to go out and buy the right type of property.
And what's important to think of a context too, Ben, is owner-occupiers buy with their heart, not their calculator. Oh. And so what I want to do is I've been to that many auctions where I'll comp it up and there's a reasonable price expectation that I'll make and I'll put a little buffer on that just because, you know, it's a great property. But then sometimes, you know, and I employ a professional intimidation tactic, and that's largely because I'm comfortable speaking in front of a group. But every now and then, no matter what I do, someone's going to come and they're going to shoot the lights out, outbid me. And essentially what they're doing is they're throwing logic out the window, because mm-hmm. logically they shouldn't pay that price, but they do. Their heart is fully invested in it. It's the school around the corner. It's the sister lives across the road. They grew up in the area. There's a great sort of cafe culture nearby. Whatever it is, they've just said, I don't care, I've got to have it. Mm. We've done it with a car, we've done it with a pair of jeans, we've done it with an iPod, whatever it is. But that's the fundamental underlying principle of why we're chasing an owner-occupier appeal. Because if you're buying a property that's next to another property or within a kilometre radius of another property that someone just throws their heart at it, and then you send the most important person in the entire equation out to value your property, and then they go and use that as a comp, it helps lift the values of the property. So that's the underlying principle versus the investor appeal stuff, where the investor just does a calculation, whatever pops up on that screen is ultimately what they'll make a decision on. No emotion, walk away. They don't let logic throw out the window.
And they'll get the drag up value of everything going on. And we both have it. I mean, I know you've told me a couple of stories where you've been engaged, I've been engaged by a buyer, and they've just said, whatever it takes.
Mm-hmm.
Like, no cap, no. No cap. So get out there and buy the property. So obviously our job is to intimidate and send, you know, show that we've got the deepest pockets in the world, and ultimately we've been successful in buying those properties. But that's the rarity, because that's usually we're buying for an owner occupier as opposed to an investor in that case, because it's maybe against our better judgment to be paying that sort of price. But they don't care. They just want that asset. So we're in the street. We've now got a sense of the streetscape. Let's turn and look at the property price. Ooh. And what are we looking for in when we see that dream property?
For me, it's the street presence on the street. So flat streets are easy, but what if you're not on a flat street? Are you on the high side? Are you on the low side? Because just by nature, people prefer to be on the high side rather than the low side. And then for a whole range of reasons. So for me, that's the first thing. What is the geography? What's the undulation of the land? Because that's where I want to be. All things being equal, it's all about the street presence and which side.
Yep. So for me, I like, you know, pick a fence or some type of fence. And I don't like a busy garden.
Mm.
I don't like, you know, someone who's pottering in this 50,000 pot plants or anything like that. I want a central walkway up to the veranda. So it's a perfect world. And even if I'm looking at, say, a single-fronted semi, and I still would love a little bit of veranda or a little bit of lawn at the front. You know, some of them in Collingwood and North Detroit, they're just, you know, basically the fence is effectively one step and you're on the veranda. So that doesn't have... Because you feel pressured like you're on the street, don't you? You feel like the front door is effectively straight on the street, and then they're usually maybe busier streets, so I don't get that sense of depth that I can sit on my front veranda, grab a good book, you know, soak up the afternoon sun. That's not what I'm getting with those types of properties. So when I'm walking up the property, I like clean garden lines. I also like a little night light, so the night lighting or a bit of a strip lighting around that, so to light up the trees at night. That's going to give me a sense of warmth and caring in that particular property. So that's the perfect. And then I come up to the veranda, and I'm also, you know, taking a step back and having a look at the style of the property and saying, is it boxy? Is it nice? Is it exactly what people are looking for?
For me, it's the context of the property within the street. So what does this property look like in context for every other property? So by that, is every other property in the street a weatherboard and this one's a brick or vice versa? Or does everyone else in the street actually have parking off street, and this is the only one with it on street, or vice versa. I'm wanting to build that context as to how this actually fits, because if you think about, as we as humans, we want to mirror, we want to be same, we want to be like, and so we don't want to stand out for the wrong reasons. But sometimes it might mean that's how you get into the suburb. But if we're talking, this podcast is a textbook. We're building a textbook here, so that and there's always fluctuations. But if we overlay that textbook, then at least people can get a bit of a sense of that. So for me, I want to know the context of this street compared to every other street. I want to know the context of this house compared to every other house in the street, just to give me that sense of that emotional investment that people have in the property.
And if I've got a bit of elevation there, so the veranda's set up a little bit higher, so I can see maybe over the front fence, so you know, high side, low side of the street is really a good one. So it just gives me a sense of if I'm actually going to spend some time on the veranda having a G&T as the sunset, I've got some type of aspect. And again, that depth of that aspect is really powerful in different streets.
Gin and tonic, Ben. Look at you. Hey, before we're about to step, I know you've just built it beautifully as we step up to the front door.
Yep.
But what I want everyone to do is just turn around and face the other side of the street.
Yep.
And I want to know that there's another front door that I can see rather than a back fence.
Yes.
Because that's going to really affect what that streetscape looks like. So that quite often happens if you've got a main road going through a suburb and there's a little lane behind the main road.
Yep.
You end up often seeing the the backside of those houses. Often,
that's a C grade street, isn't it? Yeah,
it totally. Is. So that's what we want to make sure that as we turn around, we look at our neighbours. We want to make sure we can see their front door because that gives us that sense of security. That sense of we've got to remember our friends are going to roll up on a Saturday night for a dinner party, and you want them to. There was an episode I did on the show Location, Location, Location Australia. And there was a guy, and he goes, "Bryce, I just want to go up the driveway and sort of say, I can't believe that I live there." You know, and he wants his friends to say, "I can't believe that you live there." Well, if they're turning around looking at another neighbour, you've got a better chance of them saying that rather than they turn up and it looks like it's a bit of graffiti. Like, "Mate, I can't believe you live here." So that's important.
True. Okay. So, I mean, obviously with some of the more modern homes that we're building now, the driveway, the garage, the two-door garage is going in, and there's usually a side entrance, like a service entrance into the house. But in terms of that grander entrance and that walking up that driveway and that veranda, the footpath going to the veranda, a centralised approach to that gives a little bit more sense of opulence and grandeur, and that's where you'll get a little bit more bang for buck in terms of that, oh, look at the people walking as they come through the entry gate, they're coming in and they're seeing the garden all well done and thinking, wow, this is a home that's full of love and appreciation for the building of the garden and what they're doing with it.
Look at you, mate, showing your feeling side. So as we walk through, then we're going to overlay, what I do is overlay the textbook floor plan.
Yeah.
So if you can just, I know this is hard to visualise on a podcast, but if you think of a rectangle that's built into four sort of equal sections, the front section of that rectangle is the sleeping zone. The next section is the services. The next section is living, and then the final section is entertainment. And if you think that through, you walk through that front section, there's the bedrooms. Then you walk through to it and you've got your laundry and your bathroom. Then you walk through to the kitchen and the living and the dining. That's where you do most of your living. And then you walk out the back and you have your entertaining. That is textbook floor plan. And,
totally textbook.
And perfect textbook.
But it is perfect textbook because it's also accommodating the fact that you're on a quiet street. So that's why. Because if, people might say, "Well, if I'm on a busy street, will I put my bedrooms in front?" Of course not. You'll obviously put some of the sitting rooms or something like that, or the dining room or, the kids' room at the front and then work back from that. But the reality is we're talking about textbook.
Well, if you think about it too, Ben, we've got young kids. We've got them asleep at the front, we can still actually live at night at the back.
Yes.
And then you walk through some of these older properties, and then quite often, even a single fronted, you'll have a bathroom right at the back of the floor plan.
Yeah.
So if they think that through, you've got someone over on a Saturday night, your teenage daughter actually is having a shower and she has to come out and walk to her bedroom.
Yeah.
That's just awkward. That's not preferable. That sort of stuff to walk past your guests. So that's why you think about this from a textbook standard. If the shower is next to the bedroom, you're straight in. Your privacy is maintained. And then, of course, the living out the back.
So we open the doors. Now, when I say doors, because it's interesting. I mean, obviously, a wider hallway and a higher ceiling gives that initial internal wow factor. So it doesn't have to be over the top on ornate ceiling work and all of that, but just that general sense of opening up those that front door to a wider hallway. Mm. Now, not every property is going to have that. So, you know, your hallway is your hallway, but if you do have a sense of space in that hallway, you know, with an arrival sort of, what are those things called on the side there, Bryce? Where you put all your keys and you hang your hat racks and
mate,
all that.
I'm uncultured as you are. Maybe you could ask Ivers for
that. Yeah, it's something. It's a rival thing. It's got a mirror, make sure we're all in order when we're walking the kids out. That's usually the way in which it goes. You can see I'm not an interior designer.
No. But you're right. You want the high ceilings. You want the ornate features wherever you can because people will place a premium on that. But as you walk through the bedrooms, Ben, for me, you know, I want the proportions to be 3+ by 3+. That's usually, you know, 3 point something meters by 3 point something meters.
Yep.
I've bought plenty of properties under 3, but we're talking about textbook owner-occupier appeal. As much space as we can get is ideal.
Built-ins, obviously the robes. We want doors on those usually to try and keep it clean and look nice. Obviously, the higher ceilings give that sense of size and space for those rooms. And what's really important, even into the bedrooms, is natural light.
Mm-hmm.
And we're going to talk about natural light as we walk right through that property, because what we also don't necessarily want is a hallway that's struggling with natural light. You know, if we open up the front doors in summer, we'll get that flow through of air that's coming through. But as we walk through that property, we're looking for the size and space of those bedrooms to be able to accommodate that. And then that's pretty easy. And we don't want too busy a bedroom. Sitting chairs and all that is over the top. It's just enough space where there's area for a desk, for study, and also the robe and obviously double beds in each room.
So size matters for owner-occupier appeal, Ben. So if you can, with the master bedroom, you want an ensuite, but
yes,
ideally 100%. You want two. You want the ensuite and you want a separate bathroom as we walk through.
So talk to me about that separate bathroom, because obviously inside an ensuite, you usually don't get a bath. Usually it's, you know, in the smaller ones, you're getting a shower, but in the bigger, more opulent homes, you obviously get the freestanding bath. And in the main bathrooms, you're also potentially getting the double vanity.
Mm-hmm.
And in the ensuite, you're getting the double vanity, but you certainly don't have the shower over the bath.
Mm.
You know, in the main bathroom, you want to try and avoid that. You want to have enough space in that bathroom area where that. And obviously the biggest no-no for bathrooms is having the toilet in with the main bathroom. Now, I own one of those properties where the toilet is right next to the shower and it's performed very well, but we are talking about textbook here in terms of looking at that, because if we can separate the toilet from the bathroom, even in the flats that you buy, that is a big difference, because if you've got two, share flatmates and having the one bathroom and with the one toilet in their bathroom, it doesn't work.
No.
It doesn't work.
Separate water closet is ideal, Ben. Absolutely. So for me, a couple of things then. You touched on it. You want good natural light.
Yep.
For me, it's the aspect as well. And so the obvious one is you go, what's the view of Bondi Beach? No, I'm talking about when I look out of the kitchen, am I looking into a wall or am I looking into the garden or am I looking into something that's pleasant? Because I'm going to spend a lot of time there. So I want to be scouring around looking for what aspects do I have in the main living areas, because this is going to impact me a fair bit.
Mm.
So the better the aspect, textbooks of view of the ocean, but just dumb it down to what am I looking into, something that's ugly or am I looking to something that's pleasant, because I'm going to spend a bit of time doing it.
Yeah, because what we have noticed over the generations is there has absolutely been a real change as we move out into the living zones, where the kitchen used to be away. It used to be, you know, you used to hide to do the cooking and then bring the food out and present that into the living zone. These days, with all of our great cooking shows and food is now an artistry, it's part of our living. We absolutely want to break bread and create food in an open environment. So we might still have the side kitchen, and that might limit potentially the views down the side, because obviously we might have a neighbouring house. But if that's part of an open plan type forum where we've got the kitchen and dining, or kitchen and living, that works.
Mm.
You know, that has been a big part of that new transition of what we've got.
Well, I think that brings up a very good point for it's flow. You know, we talked about textbook. If you don't have a textbook floor plan, what does the flow look like? It doesn't make sense that you have to go from your living area through your kitchen, through your laundry to get out the back to hang out at summer. Because it makes sense you want to just go in and out, have that alfresco dining. So for me, the next step is to make sure that the flow of the floor plan makes sense. And if you think about some of, I know you've got a cow bung, but some of the cow bungs, instead of being long and thin like they had in the Victorian era, they went sort of fatter. And quite often cow bungs had a room in the middle where they just built floor plans around. Correct. Where there's no natural light.
Yeah, well, I mean, that was effective. I mean, our original cow bung was a two-bedder with double doors into dining, and it had a servery window, and the servery was next to the fireplace. And obviously, you know, the cooking was done in this dark and dingy, smoky room, and it was served through the window. Ours is a 1927 cow bung, and that's basically what happened. So we've obviously had to recalibrate that. We've knocked out that middle room, and now that's a staircase and an open floor plan to come out to the back to the living zone, or the social zone, as we call it.
Mm. Yeah, well, you're the definition of what we're talking about, because in terms of, you know, you're going through a building process now, but yep. You did have the old lean-to kitchen, yep. didn't you?
Classic separate, lean-to, yeah. You know. Jane has had to put up with that for many, many years, so we're only getting over that now, which is really exciting. But that's the classic case of, yep, you know, in the 50s and 60s, we just did these lean-tos. You know, so that the reality is that's obviously a challenge for that. So as we're working through those zones, you know, we've gone from the bedroom zones into the bathroom zones and the wet zones, and now we're coming out into the living and lifestyle zones.
Yeah, yeah. So again, for me, there's one thing you can't get too much of as an owner-occupier, and I think, I reckon I could get 100% guarantee everyone agrees with this. Maybe someone will say no, but...
what's the main trip? You're looking for the top 40. Just remember top 40.
Storage. You cannot have enough storage. Mm. So that's something that we're looking for with owner-occupier appeal, because people got to store their stuff. There's no Dropbox for stuff, is there, Ben? You've got to put it somewhere.
You can't put it in all in Evernote, can you, mate?
Oh, actually, there's a good point. No.
Take all of those photos and just put it in Evernote.
Storage
is critical.
Critical. And so looking for opportunities to be smart with storage.
Yep.
You know, a great one I've seen is where they lift the stairs up, boom, and then you put your shoes in the stairs and then drop each stair down as a good little storage spot. But clearly that's something we need to look for.
Yeah, so I'm sort of in that sort of living zone. I'm coming through. So I've got maybe an island bench in the kitchen area. I think that sort of just does make that natural separation, but keeps it light and open. I've seen some houses where they make the island bench the big cooking area, and they bring down the exhaust systems. I think that breaks the flow up a bit. I'd much prefer to see that sort of on the wall area, but because I want that openness, I want to be able to call out to the kids or call them in to wash their hands for dinner or that type of thing. So that's really important.
Do you want a little interesting fact for you? If you have a really great house with an island with a cooktop on it and no exhaust above it, you've got a very high chance of a television show renting your house for the day to do a cooking show.
Of course.
Because that's what they're looking for.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Because they want to be able to get all different angles.
They want to get all the angles, and it's not very often that they find it. So when they find a good one...
I know someone who's got one, so there you go. I'll have to send pass on their details.
But a little caveat, we've actually had our TV crew through, and my... What we do to their house is, I don't think there's enough money to, like, we wear, like, there's a cast of thousands in their house. I don't know that it's worth $1,000 a day.
Wear and tear for a few days. Yep. So I, you know, in terms of my perfect floor plan is then having the living zone, so where the, maybe the nightly news is being played and where a bit of that sort of lounge main activity of the house is, as we talk about our day and maybe have a glass of red or something along those lines, and we're talking to the kids about their day, that to me is all in that area. And then I've got a little side area off the side where there's the dining. So, you know, we go to the dining table for catching up and all of that. But the main living zone is really, that's ground zero for lots of activity in terms of that. So I've got other more sort of formal sitting areas and those type, but that's the you know, ground zero for that type of thing. So we've got that right, and then where do we go from there?
Mate, we step out the back, and then we've got to see where the sun is, mate. So it's all about orientation.
It is.
What's the orientation of the block? So if we live below the equator, we want to be north-facing.
Yes.
We live north of the equator, we want to be south-facing. People often ask what that's all about. Mm. Well, you want the living areas to be facing north, ideally. Mm. And it's very simple. in the winter sun, it's lower,
yep.
and you want it pumping in. Comes over
from the east and settles in the west.
Yep. But instead of going right over the top, it's got that little sort of 45 degree arc, which means it's shooting all that natural light in, shooting all that warmth in, to wherever you can get the north. And it's interesting, where first time, I've seen it loads, where you get first time home buyers who effectively go to the house supermarket. They go and pick a block off, you know, they put a dot on the block, and then they go and pick a plan and they orient it, and then they build it and they go, oh my goodness, oh, I've totally forgotten to think about the orientation of the sun. So that's important.
Oh, it is. I mean, you know, our Kale bungalow actually faces west. Mm. So we get, you know, the sun coming in the side, but in obviously the heat of the day. Now, we're opposite a park.
Mm.
So we've obviously, you know, said the park aspect and the city views at the back outweighed the, you know, the orientation that we were looking for. But that's an example. But absolutely, the perfect...
Nothing wrong with your place, mate. Trust me. Listeners, trust me.
No, it's right now, there's a lot wrong with it. There's a lot of dirt and bricks and dust and crap everywhere. It's just a building site. But
See that violin eyes?
But it's important to know. Because obviously, the other big transition that's been happening is when we go out the back, one little door to take us out to a deck, you know, because that laundry's there or whatever, that's not a good floor plan. Obviously, the double doors, you know, the big bay doors that open up and let that indoor to outdoor area take shape makes perfect sense.
Mm-hmm. So the final thing I can think of in terms of what we look for owner-occupier appeals, we've gone at the back, got the northerly sun on our face, is then just privacy. Do our neighbours look into us?
Yep.
Or do we have that sense of looking around? Yep. I can be out the back, sort of with the kids in the pool, reading whatever I read, and I don't have 50 sets of eyes on me that I don't know about, you know, that fishbowl. So perfect is, there's enough space in the backyard that you can't see your neighbours at all.
Mm. Yeah, well, I mean, you know, I bring it back to the big thing for me, I sort of try to summarise the house into what are owner-occupiers, are they going to be house proud? And for me, if they've done all of the ticks in the box of an entertainer's home, you know, then, you know, you were talking before about if I brought a friend here and they go, oh, I can't believe what a wonderful home they've got. If you've got that entertainer element, which is you've got the areas for the kids, because the best floor plan also potentially has two zones, so two living zones, so you can separate the kids from the adults, so they can go and watch a movie and you guys can have some adult time. That is really, really important into the right type of floor plan. And they, so where some people make mistakes is they have the lounge, living, dining all in the one L shape or corner area. That is problematic if you don't have a second story where you have a loft or a landing where there's enough area where you can put three or four kids to watch a movie or something like that. So it's really, really important for me to try and see two living zones in a perfect world. That's the sort of thing that then allows me to tick the box. I've got the spare bedroom being the fourth bedroom potentially. So, you know, if they come back to that entertainment piece, that's that status.
Mm.
You know, and we all like to entertain. You know, I can feel like I can have dinner parties there and that type of thing and create memories. Then all of a sudden, I'm emotionally attached to that property.
Yeah, no, I agree, Ben. So the final thing is just decor. And I think other than to say, I think, you know, neutral light colours are often universal appeal to everyone, but people are going to have specifics about what sort of features they like, what sort of textures they like, what sort of colours. But ultimately, the owner-occupier appeal, in my view, is best served by having colour schemes that allow for light to fill the room rather than to feel like it's all heavy and
absorbed. Bring that natural light in. And if you've got certain tastes where you've got canary yellow walls or something like that, that's not in all peach, one of the favourites of the 80s. You see some of this legacy properties you're walking through and that peach. And when they do the wash, the peach wash, oh my God.
For some reason, one of my properties, I lived in it when I first lived on the Gold Coast. Yeah. And I did that sponge.
I thought it was so good sponge. Look, I'm like,
recently I just painted it back to neutral. It's like, what was I drinking? I mean, thinking. So
So there it is. You know, simple color palettes with with nice, you know, and if you've got the fireplaces and a few other those sort of wow factors that come through that, you really do have a property that is highly desirable. Now, you might be thinking, yeah, at a price tag of $2 million or $3 million, but the reality is that you can, even in, you know, sort of semis and so forth, you can still create those zones. You can still potentially allow yourself the ability to have a house that flows. Mm. And, you know, and you can still potentially, even though you might have a tight space, try to get that entertainment piece together. Now, in a city, it's not going to happen. You're going to go out to entertain. Mm. That's the way it is. Mm. You might have a balcony where you might have a pre-dinner drink, but ultimately, you know, you still want to effectively have that sense of separation in the different zones, subtly, and, you know, nice clean lines and natural light.
Here, well said. I think the point was we just had a little bit of fun. We were able to just visually take our listeners on a journey and watch the textbook. But ultimately, what we did is provide a framework. We started out wide and we came into a very finite thing. But you can, Ben, if I'm looking at a two-bedroom apartment or a flat, I can think about in terms of, is there enough storage? Has it got good natural light? Does the floor plan make sense? Is the separate toilet? Have I got separate living zones to my sleeping zones? So the principles, you know, sure, everyone wants to live in a $3 million house in Hawthorne or Mossman. But ultimately what we've done is just said, well, these are the things. Take the bits that apply to you. Get context within the suburb. Get context within the street and overlay these principles. And that'll help you determine, am I buying an asset that has owner-occupier appeal because I'm an investor? Or have I bought an asset that doesn't have owner-occupier appeal? And ultimately, the ones that do have owner-occupier appeal cater to the 70%, cater to the larger part of the market, cater to the part of the market that let emotion drive their decisions. Because let's remember that people who buy a house don't go into exorbitant research. Does it feel good?
They're going to have to compromise on some things because...
But you know what I mean? Like, they don't go through reports and stats and they go, does it feel right? Are my kids going to go to a good school? And what do my friends think about it? So if we think about it from that paradigm, we're going to be better investors, Ben.
We are. And have you been nodding your head whilst you've been going, you know, what is this like, oh, that makes, yeah, I do that. Then ultimately you've got a pretty good eye.
Mm.
So it's just a matter of putting that to work.
Mm. Yeah, no, well done. So so it kind of segues into a couple of things. You know, our ultimate goal on this podcast, Ben, is people use it to make better decisions.
Correct.
You know, hark back to episode one, don't make a dumb decision. So hopefully, and we're getting some traction because on iTunes we get some good reviews, Ben. So this one's from Stakes86. I was just about to sign a house and land package about a month ago when I found your podcast. After listening to your awesome free info, I did some more digging and realized that I was going to be paying about $30,000 over price. Thanks. This is from Samantha. Hi, guys. I'm 24 and embarrassed to say that I've only just discovered this amazing new thing, the podcast. I'm now obsessed with your channel, in brackets, are they channels? And I'm going through every single episode. I own a PPOR, but after being diagnosed with a brain tumor, I'm just now back on track saving a deposit for my first investment. I wanted to say thank you so much for taking the time to create relatable, relevant, easy to follow content. Your podcast is so valuable to me and I look forward to my commute to work every day to see what else I will learn. Thanks again, wishing you health, happiness, wealth and freedom. So obviously we're cutting through, Ben, and getting our topics are relatable. And on you lads for passing on some gems. Here's to my fourth property purchase, and that was from Liam.
Oh, very nice. And good luck to that person who's given us
a
very nice
health challenges.
Yeah. Obviously, you know, good health to you. So look, that's why we do it. We love it. We love doing it. It's always fun. If we're, you know, if you've got a couple of takeaways from today's episode, we've done our job, and that's effectively what we want.
And if we missed anything, folks, at The Property Couch, at Ben Kingsley AU, at Bryce Holdaway, let us know on social media, and we'll make sure that that it's fully covered, Ben, if there's something that we missed in that little exercise. So.
Totally. And Bryce, you know that last week we did say we were going to have Jeremy Shepherd on, but we didn't.
Mm. So he's coming up.
He is so coming up. We're in beta testing.
Yeah.
We're in beta testing of location score. So if you haven't already registered.
Last chance to let us know.
Last chance to let us know. But we are just checking it out, making sure that it's
But he's
work.
Coming. He's definitely coming, so that won't be long. Hey, life hack, Ben.
Yes.
I want to read out to Bedden, who's one of our clients, a very loyal client. Hey, Bryce, hope you're having a nice weekend with your family. I hope this email finds you well, but I couldn't stop myself saying another thank you for telling us about Blinkist. Remember my life hack?
Yes.
Blinkist.
Good, love
it's
it.
Another one I'm not on commission, just so everyone knows. I just got off the flight from the Gold Coast, during which I finished 10 book summaries.
Whoa.
10.
10. Where did he fly from?
The Gold Melbourne? Coast Ooh. To Melbourne. So that's in 2 hours is read
10
book summary. Now, it's not a substitution for reading the book, Ben, but what it means is you can cover more content, and if you like something, then you can delve and go and get the book and read the whole thing. My reading life is literally divided into the following four stages. 1, pre-school. 2, pre-audiobooks. 3, post-audiobooks but pre-Blinkist. And 4, post-Blinkist. I definitely owe this fourth stage to you, and similar to the fact I owe you and Ben the financial security of my family. So thank you, Bedden, for that. And we also got another person send us in a life hack, Ben.
Yep.
And it's terrific. We're going to put it up on our Facebook. It was from John Fryk, F-R-Y-C. I think that's, forgive me if I... He goes, here's an amazing life hack. And this plays right into the money smarts. And I wish
we love this one.
I wish I had known this one. And it's got a photo of Mr. Bean, right?
Yeah. Who's
let's build it up.
Is it
Mr. Bean?
Mr. Bean.
Lying on a bed with
Rowan Atkins.
A comic genius. Looks like a Mr. T from the A-Team quilt with a model plane and a clock in the background. Maybe a reasonably inappropriate portrait, but at the back there. You need to go and check this out.
Yeah.
But here's the hack, folks. I know you're hanging on the edge of your seat for this. If you sleep till lunchtime, then you can save on your breakfast money.
There it is. Guy's a genius.
Mate, that's how you...
You might lose your job if you keep doing it. But
you've saved on your breakfast money, so you don't need your job as much.
Love it. There's that smashed avocado. No longer needed.
No longer needed.
Save that deposit.
There we go.
There's a little link.
Did you know?
Did you know, Bryce? So, Knight Frank, Global House Index, quarter one, 2017. So we're talking about... The 12-month change in property prices globally, as measured by Knight Frank. Why do people have two names? Anyway, that's another story. Rightio. What's number one? What do you think's number one? So the biggest change in 12 months growth. Everyone's talking about Australia being booming property market. How do you think we fared?
Well, this is embarrassing for me, Ben, because... I didn't actually hear the beginning of what you said because I was thinking about something else. So therefore,
that tunes out. So it's the growth of property over the last 12 months globally for the different countries.
Yeah.
So number one.
Yeah.
Do you have a clue? I'll give you an idea. All right. So 12-month change was 17.8%. Okay. Which country was it that grew? They're in 12 months from quarter one 2016 to quarter one 2017. 12 month growth. The country was...
Russia.
Boom, boom. The country was...
Yeah, I'm just being a smart aleck now.
Iceland.
No.
Iceland's property prices grew by 17.8% for the year.
Is it igloo a structure? I mean, which valuers are going out and valuing igloos? Seriously.
Iceland had a bit price of problems of ice through the GFC, so maybe it's just recovering. Number two was
Kazakhstan.
14.4% growth.
You know I'm not going to get the answers, so that's why you're setting me up here. New Zealand.
Hong Kong.
Oh, that would have been...
Hong Kong.
Yeah.
Number three...
Shanghai.
Number three with 13.8%, New Zealand. Our friends across the ditch. Yeah, you almost got that.
Damn.
All right, Canada's number four at 13.5. Malta came in at 6. At 12.6. Czech Republic at 7 and 11% growth. Estonia came in at number 8 at 10.7. Number 9 was Hungary at 10.5. Number 10 was China at 10.3. Mate, we're not even in the top 10.
Mate, can you imagine the headlines in those newspapers?
Even in the top 10.
Housing affordability is an issue. We're in a crisis. Who can afford this?
Let's go further. Because obviously these are obviously country. There's more.
Wow.
So Norway, Ireland, India, Colombia, Sweden, Bulgaria, Lithuania, Romania, Latvia, all before Australia. We come in at 20th. Okay, obviously, because some of our other cities aren't firing like Melbourne and Sydney have been. So we come in at 7.7%. Uh-huh. So, just goes to show you, and I reckon inside, obviously, these other areas like New Zealand, Hong Kong, Turkey, Canada, there's some of those cities are going to be performing just as good as Sydney.
Mm-hmm.
All right, so just remember that, yep, we've had a good market here, but obviously property prices move in cycles in different locations. So, did you know, Bryce, 20th, we are 20th in terms of growth of property values across the globe, Knight Frank?
The answer is no, Ben. I did not know.
Thank you.
I did not know. Good. I wonder how many listeners knew.
There we go.
There you go, folks. Owner-occupier appeal. What the dickens is it? Well, hopefully we've unpacked that, Ben. Provided some gold. Any other sort of...
Yep. Bryce, remember, knowledge is empowering, but only if you act on it.
I like it. Till next week, folks.
See you later.
See you later.